Good morning. I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Workforce Labor and Economic Development Finance and Policy Committee for April 14th, 2026. Welcome all to third deadline week. I'll have some discussion about some aspects of the week, but first let's get our minutes approved. Our last meeting was on April 9th, and Chair Baker, are you willing to move approval of those minutes from April 9th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Members, any additions or corrections to the minutes from April 9th? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of those minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. So members, a lot of our work this week is going to be focused on putting together a bill for consideration from the chairs on Thursday. So we'll hear a series of proposals relating to that. Also expecting to consider a bill regarding the workforce, regarding the Workers' Compensation Advisory Committee tomorrow. I'll warn you, the process may get a little bit confusing, so we're going to take things step by step, and folks ask questions, and I want to make sure that everything receives full consideration. So we are going to change the order a little bit just because of who's available and start with House File 4884. So I'll invite our friends from Deed to make your way up if you can. We just are still waiting folks from DLI. So this bill, and this is starting off with this bit of confusion, is that because it took a little while for the reviser to put together the supplemental budget bill in our area, and I think some others as well, the bill was introduced after deadlines, such that the bill is in the possession of the Rules Committee. So we're hearing it informationally, as you'll see. This is the proposal from the administration, which Chair Baker and I have authored as a courtesy to the administration, and so we're hearing from them today regarding the proposals, and then again, this would be for consideration for the bill we would plan to vote on Thursday. And again, members, ask any questions that you may have. But in the meantime, welcome, Commissioner. Welcome, Mr. Bowdery. So glad to have you with us, and please identify yourself and then proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, good morning. Wonderful to be back with all of you again. I missed you. And happy to be talking about the governor's supplemental budget recommendations, and thank you for the courtesy of introducing this and the opportunity to discuss. So just at a high level, and we have, I think, 10 slides or so, we can be pretty efficient. I know you've heard some of this before. The high-level objective of what's reflected in the governor's supplemental proposals is to preserve vitality for the economy and to grow it. And as you see, the governor's proposed fiscally responsible plan that maintains a balanced budget while preparing our economy and workforce for the future. And what it adds up to is a limited set of investments with fiscal responsibility to ensure long-term financial health and yet make those key investments in a few areas. So one item that you have maybe heard about in the news is this notion of preparing Minnesota's economy for artificial intelligence. And in a way, it pairs together two somewhat related topics of social media and artificial intelligence. You can see the governor is recommending a tax on large social media platforms. And maybe it says, yeah, I guess the final bullet is that the tax piece, of course, does go through the Department of Revenue's budget bill. But the revenue piece would involve Deed, and the revenue would be dedicated to new special revenue funds supporting workforce and economic development initiatives, preparing our economy and workforce for increased AI utilization. There's a council that would be created, and the language outlines who would be appointed to the council, sort of a broad range of individuals representing various backgrounds and expertise. And it would be estimated to generate a large sum, first $46 million and then $194 million over 28-29. And so we think this is an important conversation about impacts of AI. Of course, it can have very positive impacts and negative ones as well, and so we want to be prepared for it and help workers to be prepared also. Next, responding to impacts of Operation Metro Surge, and I believe in this committee we have had the opportunity to discuss this in the past, and so I won't go into great detail, but once again, as you know, the governor's recommendation has been a $10 million fund to provide emergency relief to impacted businesses. These would be partially forgivable, zero interest throughout their term. It's a three-year term. I'm not sure if we say that here. If the businesses can show a decline of 33% or more in gross revenue compared to the prior year, the loans would be small, so targeting the smallest businesses that have the least capacity to absorb the impact. And I believe it's at the 18-month mark out of a three-year term that the businesses could apply to have the loans partially forgiven, half forgiven. and relevant to our discussion last week. We would employ many layers of fraud protection and prevention protocols to ensure effective use of the dollars. Next, the Service to Success Initiative. Governor's recommending $3.5 million from the Workforce Development Fund for the Service to Success program. This would increase grant funding to organizations that provide public service opportunities in priority workforce areas. So just to remind you, because Service to Success is relatively new, we now have this small Office of Public Service at DEED, with the purpose being to help elevate those opportunities for non-military service. Of course, military service is a very important and valued way that people can defend our country and serve more broadly. But also we would like to have additional opportunities for that, such as AmeriCorps, and want to connect those kinds of service opportunities then to career opportunities for when the public service piece is done. And now, of course, you could include even state service, I think, in those definitions. But we are excited to have that program now at DEED, and in fact, there is a current grant round underway. It's quite small, and what I have understood from our folks that are running that is they feel they've only scratched the surface of the impact that we can make. And so the recommendation here, the proposal, would be additional grants for expansion, in some cases, of existing programs, and then innovation for new service to career pathways. Next, we have a budget neutral recommended codification of Pathways to Prosperity. This is a competitive grant program supporting economically disadvantaged adults to enhance their employability or improve their skills and credentials. And it's a long-standing program. It's tried and true. We think it works well, but relevant to, I think, some conversations that I've had with the chairs, this would basically provide clear expectations and just make sure we all are on the same page about how we operate the program, because I think it's in session law. It was created in session law and leaves a lot of discretion to us, which we appreciate, but at the same time, knowing that there have been conversations about metrics and about prioritization of who gets the money amongst the nonprofits that apply, thought that codification could be helpful in that regard to make sure we're on the same page. And then similarly for Drive for Five, also budget neutral recommendation to codify. This is a newer program. If Pathways to Prosperity was 2016, Drive for Five, I think, was 2023. And that is the one that focuses on the five key sectors. Currently, those are caring professions, education, manufacturing, technology, and trades. And the language in the bill would allow for modification of those sectors as the economy evolves. So we do think it is important to have sector-focused policy so that we can sort of put a few chips extra on the sectors that have the greatest opportunity, the greatest need, the greatest impact. But also we know that those could change over time. And so despite codification, this would allow some flexibility to make those adaptations. Next, another budget neutral policy piece. So IBDPI is what we're talking about here. As you can see, that stands for Innovative Business Development Public Infrastructure. So a reminder of what this is all about. Our community development unit at DEED can make grants to, I think it is municipalities, maybe only, and it's to provide for them to put in public infrastructure that will then facilitate private sector growth. So think about a road or maybe sewer infrastructure associated with an industrial park. And when they make that application, it's predicated on the hope and expectation that a particular type of business is going to then make use of that public infrastructure at that industrial park. And so this recommended policy change would align IBDPI with the other BDPI you're probably familiar with, Greater Minnesota BDPI, so that they would have the same policy feature, which is that if the private sector project or type of project that was anticipated does not materialize after 10 years, then it would be okay for a different kind of project to locate there, as opposed to, I think, it being basically on ice forever. And again, this would align it with the way it already works that way in just core BDPI, which is the Greater Minnesota one. Next, an appropriation transfer to Met Council, also budget neutral. This would just simplify in the sense that Met Council already received funding for a different portion of the same project, and it would be most efficient, they agree and we agree, if they managed all of the money for it, as opposed to having part of it go through deed. And Met Council is carrying this provision in their bill. And that concludes our recommendations, and I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you so much, Commissioner, and thanks for your work. Members, questions for the Commissioner regarding these proposals? If anybody has any. Chair Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for sharing this with us. I did have a question back on the Service to Success initiative. Again, I haven't heard a lot about the program. Thank you for your explanation. You said it's relatively a new program. Can you tell me roughly, if you can, how long has it been here around, and how many folks has it served? And you're saying that your team is saying that this, we're just kind of scratching the surface. Go a little deeper on this program. Again, this is, I believe, what I heard you say is helping some folks in the military, leaving the military and getting into work. Maybe just explain a little bit further, but I'm curious as to how many it's roughly helped. And go ahead.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I may have confused things a little bit by mentioning military. What I was doing there was contrasting that military is one wonderful way that folks can serve after finishing high school, for example. But in addition to that, the purpose of Service to Success is to elevate other ways of serving Minnesota. And so, for example, AmeriCorps, others like that. And then I do, again, think of state service as another one. But this is relatively new as of, Devin, can you remind me, was it 2020? Just last year? Yeah. So just last year, relatively new, getting it off the ground. We've hired a great director of the program, and now they have just gotten to the point of launching the first RFP because it has a small amount of grant-making authority. I want to say $750,000 maybe per year. And I don't know that the applications are in, but our director has indicated, and of course this is the governor's recommendation as well, but that we think that there is more opportunity for helping the programs that do fall under this umbrella to market themselves better, to reach more young people that would like to fill those kind of service opportunities, and then also be connecting to other resources at DEED and to employers so that you're not just doing AmeriCorps and then you're on your own at the end, but rather hopefully we are steering you in a direction of some of those employers that we know have needs for talent.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Members, any other questions? Yeah, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not being on the taxes committee, I never really anticipated getting to see the portion over the tax on large social media platforms. And so I think it's worthy, while the commissioner is here, to seek to understand what the department has at this point in terms of an outlook as to what this total cost is going to be in your eyes to transition Minnesota's workforce to be better prepared to work in an AI-generated economy.
Big question. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah, very big question indeed. So if I could ask for clarification, it was about the cost of preparing for it, because we have, of course, the revenue numbers for the tax itself, but that could be maybe a drop in the bucket relative to what it will be to adapt ultimately. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, happy to talk about this. So, you know, when there is a new tax imposed on, by the way, not the large tech platforms, but my small business and countless, and not dozens, actually tens of thousands of Minnesota small businesses are the ones who pay this tax. Literally. Not Meta, not X, not Elon Musk. Minnesota small businesses pay this tax. And so the question is a philosophical question for us this morning, right? It's this question over what amount of government money, taxpayer money, funded by Minnesota small businesses should go to training the future of Minnesota's workforce for AI? So that's the question. And if this idea is going to pass this session, then I know for certainty that our side of the aisle in both bodies is going to want to hear what the amount of money is that we expect that the state needs to pay to best prepare Minnesota's workforce for this need. Okay? And so that's the question that I'll bring back to you, Commissioner, is we know how much money, according to the revenue estimates, that the tax generates. What is the need in order to transition Minnesota's workforce across the board for AI-related economy and jobs?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. I would say that's a very philosophical question, and the answer would depend on, well, exactly how well prepared do we intend to make people? We could do the Cadillac version or the medium version, et cetera, and the governor's recommendation is to do it at this level that would provide, you know, those revenues to put into the council's control so that we can help to train workers to adapt their own skills, perhaps to make use of this, or to assist workers that are dislocated by the technology. And I guess another reason that there's a lot of uncertainty on this number is because this technology involves a lot of uncertainty for all of us, and I would submit that nobody exactly knows how it will evolve, where it will go, what the impacts will be. And I would also just note, though, regarding your question about the entities that bear the burden, I mean, as I understand it, on the revenue side, it would be applied to the large social media companies that have above a certain number of regular users in Minnesota. Now, whether the companies then choose to try to pass that on to users, that's up to them. But in terms of, you know, Minnesota small businesses paying it, other steps would have to happen before that would be the case.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad that I have this private sector experience to be able to share around the House of Representatives and with you and with countless other Minnesotans, because there is a cost to do business. And when I go and I place an ad on Facebook for my family's small business, I know a cost to reach a certain number of customers. And when I place an ad, Facebook delivers that cost to me. And what they will do very easily, and frankly, it's probably going to be generated by AI, is they will say that for $20, instead of reaching 3,500 people, I can only reach 3,000 people. That's the impact to this tax. And so, in essence, that is a direct cost passed down to me. If I need to reach 3,500 people, then I might have to pay $35. Okay? So just to frame this up for you, this is the same conversation that business owners on Lake Street in Minneapolis would have to have. This is the conversation that they would have on Superior Street in Duluth. It's the same conversation. How many customers can I reach with the amount of money that I'm going to spend for marketing? That's the open question. And so for us, is it better for us to have this new program? And I guess that's my next question. Is all of the money on this from this tax going to this new special revenue fund that supports workforce and economic development? Or is this also going to other areas of Minnesota state budget?
And I may just say that I think neither the tax nor actually the spending is in the bill in front of us, and we'll certainly direct the question to the commissioner, Representative Schultz asked. But just I think as this is considered, really would be in the revenue committee, the tax committee. Appreciate you raising it in front of us. And Commissioner, please do answer Representative Schultz's question.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. So again, we covered some ground there, and I'm familiar with how boosting an ad or paying for an ad works. Now, the fact that this tax would be applied to the larger social media companies, for one thing, does mean, I suppose, that smaller social media companies might have then a competitive advantage when it comes to serving your business or others that they would choose to serve. But it would amount to a strategic choice to apply that tax and then put it into a productive use. And I believe it is only confined to the purposes you just mentioned, not to go to other sundry needs, according to my knowledge. But that is an important investment to make. And at present, there's just a lot of conversation about it, but we don't have resources to do things in a very targeted way when it comes to AI. And so, it's an important conversation to have. The governor has highlighted the fact that these large social media companies that the tax would be applied to generate, massive revenues with very large, not just revenues, but large net income and could afford to pay this tax. And they do it using all of our data as we are, browsing Facebook Marketplace or whatever you're on. And ultimately, the question is, do consumers get value for that? Well, this would be one way to make a more direct link to value in terms of their data then being translated into services for preparing for AI.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've covered some ground here, and I'm hoping that this has been informative for everyone, whether it's there are folks in this room or the public listening at home. And this is incredibly important, right? Does our state need $194 million in the next biennium? Does our state need $194 million of taxpayer money to move our workforce into a place of better AI utilization? And what number of Minnesotans will be served by that program? We don't have those answers today.
And a reminder, we will not be deciding in our committee anything relating to this, but of course it relates to workforce development. It's really important. So Representative Green, we're going to you next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the conversation. I don't think it is philosophical to say that both this committee and this legislature and this administration is trying to figure out who has the power to regulate and determine the impacts of AI and this new technology, who sets the guardrails, who the benefits and burdens of this technology, this new powerful technology, apply to. And I think what Minnesotans have been asking us, not just on this bill, but we have heard other bills relating to surveillance wage setting in this bill, in this committee. We have heard so many bills about the Minnesotans' desire that their lawmakers actually take some charge and give them some power back. We are talking about, and the companies you're talking about, the companies we are talking about both taxing and thinking about the workforce impacts in this committee are giant multinational corporations that control the models, right, that we don't currently regulate or control over. They surveil us. They extract as much as possible from us, from our workforce, as we are seeing with surveillance wage setting, from our consumers, as we're seeing with surveillance pricing. And they are extracting both money and data. And frankly, Congress has fallen down on the job. And I think what we are doing here is trying to figure out how we regulate these companies, how we train Minnesotans to both be ready for a workforce, but also to be able to have some power so that we are not all just victims of the model. And frankly, I think what some of this revenue generation ideas are about are dealing with the impacts and the burdens that this technology and these companies are currently and setting out to do. I just feel like this is another example of this conversation of where Republicans have been really working hard to protect the biggest, most powerful companies in the world at the expense of Minnesotans. And so I appreciate this conversation. I appreciate you making that very clear, Representative Schultz, of where you and your party are. What I would say is I think we should be in this body in a bipartisan way, and I know there are bipartisan bills out there, thinking about how we put Minnesotans, our economy, our local electeds in the driver's seat, so that as this technology comes, we actually are the ones who decide how and what the benefits and the guardrails are for our economy.
Thank you, Representative Zelenikar.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you to the Commissioner. My question is really on asking you your insight on the governor's budget. I know that we have the Drive for Five initiative in the workforce. It outlines, you know, caring professions, education, manufacturing, trades, and technology, which we talk a lot about in this committee. But I guess I'm wondering why there's a disconnect. We allocated around $100 million dollars to in higher ed, you know, so that if a family makes under $80,000, they could be their child could be eligible for education, which I understand the concept of that. What I don't understand is why there's not alignment between the agencies, so that the priority for those students being granted eligibility would line up with the Drive for Five. I mean, we have a nursing shortage, we have an education shortage, we have public safety shortage, we need to build houses, we have trades, technology that we talked about. So I'm curious as to where there's conversations and collaboration between commissioners to line up models, because it doesn't seem to match to me. If you could address that, that would be helpful.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thanks very much for the question, and I would agree with the premise that we should be aligned as much as we can be, acknowledging that the policy is not entirely in the control of the executive branch. Whoops, I moved that. So, you know, the Drive for Five, for example, is in legislation, and so we're delivering it that way. We, of course, get to advocate for it. But when it comes to the question of are we collaborating and coordinating, in my time in this job, which is just coming on 3 years, when I was brand new, we had conversations along these lines under the auspices of the governor's One Minnesota kind of strategic planning effort, and those continue. And one thing that we realized was that there was even an appetite and an opportunity for more coordination across the agencies, because as much as DEED is proud to be a primary workforce development agency, we acknowledge that lots of our sister agencies do have resources that bear on this, including OHE. And so we thought that there would be a good opportunity for more collaboration. Now, it already happens to a certain degree under the governor's Workforce Development Board, but that entity has lots of commissioners. It also has lots of higher ed. It has private business, et cetera. It has, I think, over 60 members. And so that is very useful and important, but it's also larger than just the agencies. And so we created a separate entity called the Interagency Workforce Alignment Task Force, more acronyms, but it is where on a regular basis we get together with Commissioner Blissenbach is here, and with Commissioner Olson and folks from MDE, DHS, and others, so that we can talk about, if not necessarily aligning at the policy level of North Star Promise, for example, because that's not necessarily in our control, but doing things like connecting those of us that have grant-making resources and comparing best practices, trying to make sure that we are not duplicating. We are, you know, doing things in a complementary way to try to squeeze all the value we can out of the resources that each of our agencies have. And then the last example I would give is in the budgetary process, when we are producing our recommendations to the governor's office, that ultimately some of which become his proposal, now we have a little bit better access to knowledge of what each other have budgetarily on workforce development, so that again we're not accidentally kind of all recommending similar things that would maybe saturate that part of the market and then leave this other segment untapped. So we're aiming for, I think, what you're suggesting.
Representative Lesicar.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you, Commissioner. I mean, the reality is taxpayers are asking me that. They're like, you sit on workforce committee, our job is to do things that line up the workforce. I'm not on higher ed, and so I understand that there's different agencies, but taxpayers look at it like businesses do. You have a strategic plan, and the goals all should align. So if the goals don't align between commissioners and agencies, it's a miss for our communities, because the reality is we have shortages that have been identified through DEED. It should be matching all the way through. If we're going to have, for example, right now, the way that law was written is it's $80,000, but you know, the student can move to Colorado and go work for Colorado. There's nothing in there that says they need to work for Minnesota for 2 years, like you do with when we've done rural grants for physicians to come out and serve underserved populations. to have their loan forgiven. So it seems to be not aligned. And I think when we're looking at jobs, the economy, and our communities, we need to make sure the agencies all line up. And I wanted to note that for the record, because I'm getting asked that. Why are we not doing that? And I think it should be a top priority. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wayne Johnson. Is not, oh, there you are, okay.
Thank you, Chair Pintle. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Representative Schultz, for bringing up this issue regarding the tax issue. I appreciate it because as a fellow business owner, I also know taxes placed on a business are a pass-through cost. And ultimately, who pays any tax that you put on a business is the consumer. So it's not being honest by saying you're going after the big guys, you're going after the big companies, because they're just adding it on to their cost and passing it down to the consumer who you're claiming to be protecting. They are the ones that ultimately pay everything. Any smart business, any business, is going to just take that tax, add it on to the cost, and pass it on down. In this situation, it's for social media. In the taxes committee, they want to put there's a bill we heard to put a sales tax now on social media, which is going to hurt small businesses because small businesses like myself use Facebook ads, use social media to get your message out. That's how you compete with the big guys. That's one of the unique ways you can do it. But unfortunately, now we want to say, no, that's not how you're going to be able to compete because we need to put that tax on you, which ultimately will go down to the consumer. So I think we need to, instead of going after the different, you know, saying the Republicans are for big business, no. Republicans are for the end consumers with the understanding they can't afford anything more. They are on the edge, and that all these taxes that we try to hide by saying we are going after big business and we're doing this for you is ultimately going against the consumer and those who cannot pay for it. Remember, tax, sales taxes or stuff like that are regressive. And so it's time to be a little bit more honest, and hopefully you know this, that when you go after businesses, no matter what size, put a tax on them, you're ultimately just increasing the tax burden. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here. And thank you, Representative Schultz, Representative Johnson, Representative Lenskart. All excellent points that I consistently hear from constituents, from small business owners, from business owners in my community. And the consistent message that I hear over and over and over again is, when is it enough? When is it enough that these taxes are being pushed onto us when we're not being asked about these things? And the other consistent question that I get from people is, Ben, why don't you guys reprioritize the needs? So, Commissioner, you said that you don't have the resources to do things. There's plenty of resources. We just have to reprioritize here at the state to be able to reduce the tax burden. And Representative Zelenskar brought it up. The commissioners need to work together. We've talked a ton about that here in labor, in education. Work together. This doesn't need to be a Republican Democrat. This doesn't need to be a fight that way. We can work together to lower the burden, the tax burden on our communities, because Republican businesses, Democrat businesses are being crushed and they cannot handle more taxes. So, that would be, I don't have a question for you. That would continue to be my charge. Work together, reprioritize so that we can meet the needs of our businesses and our employees, our employers across Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. I'm not seeing other members. I'll maybe just make a comment before sending it back to the commissioner that there is an AI tsunami on its way to our state and our country and our world. We don't know. We've never experienced this in our in the existence of humanity. We don't know exactly what's coming, but something very, very big is coming our way. And so what we need to do is figure out what to do about that. There's a question about if there's spending that's necessary and then how to pay for that spending, et cetera. And there are all sorts of different possibilities. What I'll say is I think I appreciate the focus on a question of what we in fact do about that. There are folks who are becoming extraordinarily rich as a result of AI. And it's very, very important that we consider what to do as that tsunami comes in our direction. Because I guess I'll be very interested to hear ideas from members, both of this committee and of the legislature about what our state does in response. This is an idea. I'm hearing from my Republican colleagues. They especially don't like the funding for this particular idea. Okay, fair enough. But the question is sort of what in fact are we going to do? Because there are significant changes coming. We don't know exactly what they are, but we have a responsibility to Minnesotans to be prepared for those changes to come. So, Commissioner, back to you.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And would this be kind of my closing remarks?
Yes.
Very good. Got it. Well, thank you all for the opportunity to present these recommendations and for the discussion. And, you know, just on some of the recent thoughts that were shared, I would note when it comes to the question of how much is enough, I would note, of course, that, you know, fiscal responsibility has been a through line of this budget as we started, and the fact that compared to where we were in the end of the 2023 session, now you know, significant reductions have been made both to the scale of some programs and to the revenue coming in the name of fiscal responsibility. And so it's not all increases. In fact, it's a lot of belt tightening these days, but in a select number of cases where it would make sense to make some strategic investments, that's where you see these recommendations. And I would also acknowledge that there's sort of no economic action that takes place in a vacuum and that it will not have any ripple effects. But in this case, I think it's a very worthwhile discussion to have whether having no large-scale investments in AI preparedness is better than having some. Knowing again that the large companies that we're talking about, they might try to pass on some of the cost if they can do so competitively, if no one else comes in to fill the void and offer alternative ways of small businesses, you know, being able to advertise. But at the same time, they could absorb it if they chose to. And as Chair Pinto has just said, the scale of impact of what's coming with AI and what's here now, frankly, is very large, and it does seem worthwhile to make some experiments there on what will best prepare our workers to take advantage of the positive opportunities and also adapt to what can be the harms. And so we appreciate the conversation overall and look forward to continuing with you. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thanks for your work. We really are grateful for it, and thanks for your presentation today. And we'll certainly consider what you've presented. Thank you. So with that, the chair lays over. Commissioner Blissenbach's going to, but the chair lays over the House file of, I'm sorry, I see Commissioner Blissenbach is coming on this bill. Okay. Pardon me, Commissioner Verilek. We'll have Commissioner Blissenbach come up. I guess I had not realized the two agencies were combined in this bill. My apologies. So Commissioner Blissenbach, you're now going to share your proposal regarding budget proposal that is contained in the same bill. Commissioner, if you can identify yourself and then proceed. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nicole Blissenbach. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry, and I am here to testify in support of House File 4884, the Governor's Budget Bill for DLI. My presentation will be far more interesting than deeds, so I hope you're along for the fairly non-controversial ride. So all of our proposals are contained in Article 5 of the bill, and it contains all of the language relevant to DLI. It includes several provisions related to electrical licensing fees and inspections, most of which are technical. Section 1 contains a substantive change that would phase out the Class B installer license. This is an individual license type that can be acquired to perform a limited scope of electrical work related to center pivot irrigation systems. Statewide, there are only 19 active licenses of this type, and this proposal will not impact current licenses. This change only eliminates the issuance of new Class B installer licenses so that current licensees will continue performing the same scope of work as under the current law. The Section 6 repealers also repeal outdated language related to Class B installers. Section 2 eliminates an outdated bond requirement. Section 3 is a small permit fee reduction. The fee reduction applies to the per-circuit electrical fee schedule for one- and two-family dwellings. This change lowers the threshold for applying the $165 inspection fee so that it applies when there are 14 or more feeders or circuits instead of the current threshold of 15 or more. This change is functionally lowering the cost of this type of electrical permit for exactly 14 circuits by $3. This is recommended because after last year's fee schedule updates, the fee for 14 circuits unintentionally exceeded the fee for 15 circuits. Section 4 makes a non-substantive correction to the fee listed for each separate inspection of the bonding for a swimming pool, spas, and similar installations. The minimum fee for an on-site electrical inspection was updated from $35 to $55 last year, and the fee listed in this section should be updated to avoid confusion. DLI does already charge the $55 fee for this work under the authority we have in 326B.37 subdivision 2. Finally, Section 5 updates the cross-references to the fee schedules that must be paid in the event electrical work is performed without a permit. DLI is already required to investigate when work is performed without a permit. These changes simply update the cross-references to the fee schedules that the investigation fee is based on to reflect the recent addition of new fee schedules to the statute. So that concludes my testimony. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Thanks for your work. Members, any questions for the Commissioner, any discussion regarding this portion of the bill? Not hearing any. That was simpler. Thank you, Commissioner. Yeah, reducing cost, Chair Baker notes. We'll see if there are any member of the public who wants to testify on the administration's budget proposals. And my apologies, members, for getting confused about which agencies were contained in the bill, but this 484 is both agencies. Okay, not seeing any, so then any other discussion on all members? So with that, then, House File 4884 is laid over for consideration on Thursday. Chair Baker, I think, is going to make his way to the front, because we are now going to consider proposals, policy proposals from Department of Labor and Industry. Bless you. So Chair Baker moves House File 4598 to bring that before us. There is an amendment to delete Section 2 of the bill, so just would leave Section 1. Presumably, Mr. Chair, you want to move that amendment, the A1 amendment?
Yeah, I do, Mr. Chair. Thanks, committee. I'd like to ask for the A1 amendment to be included into the bill, and then I'll have our folks at Labor update this for us. So,
okay, good. Members, unless there are any questions or discussions regarding the A1 amendment, Chair Baker has moved that, and so all in favor of approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So House File 4598 is amended, and Chair Baker, to your bill, and or Mr. Moore to the Chair Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, again, this is sort of the Dave Baker reelection bill. In front of you, this is about building code changes and how we have to update things, and it's very technical, so I'm going to flip it right over to Department of Labor right away. So
we'll go. Mr. Moore, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Josiah Moore. I'm the Legislative Director at the Department of Labor and Industry, and I'm here to testify in support of DLI's bill to update statutory language related to the delegation of building code administration to municipalities. The bill updates references to inspection and inspectors to instead use persons and code enforcement in several places, because the services a municipality provides under these delegation agreements are broader than just inspections. So this won't substantively change how DLI does these delegation agreements, but it'll just make the statute a bit more accurate to what happens in the field. And then to the author's amendment that deleted Section 2 of the bill, that would have added plan review to the list of services that shall be delegated to a municipality, but the technical advisory group that is making recommendations related to these municipal delegation agreements recommended against that change. So that's why that author's amendment was brought today. And that summarizes the whole bill, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support.
Thank you. Members, Representative Wayne Johnson.
Thank you. I just have a thank you, Chair Pintle. Thank you for bringing this forward, Chair Baker. Just want to make sure I know the idea was to work with the municipalities, so because they have staff that does many things. This won't require any changes on their part now and requiring more work on theirs to do any modification with their descriptions of their staff and how they list people, correct?
Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Johnson, for the question. That's correct. This won't change anything for municipalities. The agreements we enter into already allow them to use to have people in these roles that are reflected by the new vocabulary we're using. So it's purely just an update to make it a bit more accurate in statute and less confusing.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Johnson, okay. All right. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This reminds me of former chair of the Labor Committee, Chair Nelson, when he would bring a bill that is just changing words here left and right, and it just made me miss him this morning, quite honestly, because I was loved asking him 2 years ago, you know, what his changes were actually doing. I won't do that to you, Chair Baker.
Thank you.
And at the same time, that's oftentimes used as a mechanism, or bills like this are used as a mechanism and a vehicle for bigger and better things. Ooh. So, Chair Baker, what are your intentions with this bill?
I was going to get to that, actually.
Mr. Chair, yeah.
In my comments, and so, Mr. Chair.
You know, this bill is going to be laid over today, Representative Schultz, and I think we will see it again come up this week to talk about some other things. In fact, I'll let our current chair talk about that. But again, this is the impetus of sort of moving some things forward. So it's an important bill. It's only going to get better as it moves on. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Baker. I was going to get to that, but Representative Schultz, maybe I'll say it now. I'd mentioned that the process this week is going to get a little confusing, and this bill's an example of that. So the plan for this bill is the bill itself is going to show back up tomorrow when Chair Baker has the gavel and will become the vehicle for the Workers' Comp Advisory Commission recommendations. But the proposal from DLI that's currently in the bill, we will the plan is to present it on Thursday as part of our bill that gets voted out, since it has nothing to do with Workers' Comp Advisory Commission or Council, pardon me. And so the bill will show up again, in fact, in two ways, tomorrow and Thursday. So Representative Schultz, be at the ready. That's the plan. So any other member questions? I'll just see if anybody from the audience wishes to testify on this exciting Baker reelection bill. And not seeing any, so testimony is closed. Any further questions or discussion from members? Not seeing any, so Chair Baker, final comments on your bill.
Committee, and for the preview of what's coming this week. So thanks so much for everybody's support of this. Thank you.
Okay, great. And so, yeah, so again, members, be on the lookout for both the provision and the bill itself. And with that, the chair lays over House File 4598 as amended. For possible inclusion in a budget bill. Before I go up, because I'll be presenting the final bill, I kind of want to walk through that piece as well. So this bill that's about to be heard is going to contain a couple of proposals from me for consideration for the bill on Thursday. The bill itself is expected to serve as the vehicle for a bill to be voted out by the committee on Thursday, and the chairs will present the bill on Thursday regarding that. But first, we'll discuss these ideas I have, and so I'm going to ask the vice chair to swap seats.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. So I'll move House File 3732 to bring that before the committee. And then what I'm thinking, Madam Chair, is that I'll move the DE1 amendment, and then we can discuss that. The two amendments really are separate proposals, separate ideas. And so I'm thinking maybe we'll do the DE1, have a discussion about that, and then can move to the A1, if that's okay. So I would move both House File 3732 and then the DE1 amendment and seek to have a vote on the DE1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you like to explain the amendment?
Yes. And I suppose it occurs to me we can't have a vote without we'll need to have that the A1 amendment anyway. So the DE1 amendment, members, comes out of something that I noticed, which is that a number of the proposals that we get as a committee relate to the healthcare workforce. In general, we are investing workforce development funds on ensuring that people with barriers to employment receive support in getting access to employment. That's a good thing for all of us when that happens. The Pathways to Prosperity program and others assist adults with barriers. Youth at Work and other programs are assisting young people. That's incredibly important. There's another category, which is addressing where there are shortages in particular sectors of the workforce. I think my Republican colleagues would agree, based on their comments earlier, that in general, we can rely on the market to address when there are workforce shortages in many areas. That what happens is that folks get the training they need themselves. Employers perhaps raise wages, various aspects. Healthcare seems to be an exception to that in some areas, where we've had proposals from Representative Lesnikar, for example, to have CNAs be trained. We know there was the bill from Chair Baker jumping off from a prior year to train rural oncologists. So there are a number of examples of this. And so, members, my thought was to have a workforce grant program, as listed in the DE1, to have it be that DEED can identify areas where there are particular needs in the healthcare area and make sure that we're meeting those shortages. And I'll note that my thinking is that then, as we would fund, you'll notice that there's no dollars going to this year. This would simply be establishing the program. And then if we choose to use it, we could then allocate particular funds to particular aspects of the healthcare workforce that we may have concerns about in any given year, such as CNAs or rural oncologists or other people working in healthcare. So that is the point of the proposal. And Madam Chair, if it makes sense to just discuss it, because we wouldn't be able to vote on the DE1 without the A1 anyway, but...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just so I'm clear, the plan will be to then have you discuss the A1, adopt the A1 as an amendment to the amendment, and then adopt both.
Correct.
Okay.
And then the layover of 3732, of course, yeah. And I just don't know the best way to have that. I almost wonder if having a not sure the best way to do that. I suppose we could adopt all of them and then have a discussion about each one in turn. Maybe that is easier.
Let's do that, yeah, sure. Mr. Chair.
Yep.
So can we, so the A1 is the amendment to the amendment. All in favor of the A1, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, the A1 is adopted, and then, or the A1 to the DE1. The DE1, all in favor of the DE1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, great. So before us is now 4598 as amended.
Actually, 3732.
Yeah. Sorry, 3732 as amended. Mr. Chair, to your bill, amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, members, I described what's in the DE1, which is this healthcare workforce grant program. We can, I suppose, maybe I'll change what I was going to do before and just describe the A1 as well, then, with a separate idea, which is, you'll see it's an Office of Community Investment with Indeed. I've worked extensively in the public safety space, as folks know, as a prosecutor outside the legislature, and have worked with the Office of Justice Programs, the Department of Public Safety. That's an office that provides strategic grant management for that agency to ensure that not only are grant processes followed well in terms of vetting, et cetera, that's very important, of course, but also that there's a substantive goal achieved in the grants that are brought forward by that agency in partnership with the legislature. In particular, I had an experience in my first term, when I was in the minority, of advancing a grant program to fund state investigations of sex trafficking, collaborative multi-jurisdictional investigations. That was something that I noticed was a gap. Introduced that bill with pretty general language, and that statutory language ended up being adopted, or that legal language, that has stayed the same for many years since. But OJP has changed over time how those funds have flowed as they've developed expertise in how to best allocate those resources. So that's a model that I think works really well. Throughout the session, as I've talked to folks, I've had a number of people say to me, and I felt as well, that we really could use an OJP with Indeed, and this is this idea would establish that in this form of an Office of Community Investment. You'll see in this short paragraph the responsibilities of that office. I would anticipate that existing staff, to a certain extent, would be moved over, that there'd be, of course, relationships and work with agency staff throughout, and there'd be some funding to hire a couple of additional people as well to fill out the office. So those are two separate proposals, both being considered together today, and I know there's one testifier that there'll be for at least one aspect of this, and then open to a discussion. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there is a testifier to the bill, come up and state your name for the record. Welcome.
Good morning, Vice Chair. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mainza Taw, spelled Mayor, but pronounced Mainza, President and CEO of the Hmong American Partnership, or HAP for short. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of establishing a healthcare workforce grant program. And thank you to Chairs Pinto and Baker for your work on this amendment to this bill. This program is timely and necessary. It recognizes the fundamental truth. Workforce shortages in healthcare will not be solved by market forces alone. They require intentional, strategic investment. At HAP, we are already doing this work, and the results are clear. In 2025 alone, through our CNA, which is our nursing career pathway, and phlebotomy pathways, we graduated over 300 students, supported nearly 260 industry-recognized certifications, and helped participants move into employment at an average wage of $23.50 an hour. At the same time, 45 individuals continued on to higher education, strengthening long-term career pathways. But the demand far exceeds our capacity. Today, we have over 130 individuals waiting to enter these programs, individuals ready to work, to train, and ready to fill critical workforce gaps in our healthcare system. The challenge is not interest, the challenge is access. And so without flexible funding and programs like this, we are forced to limit enrollment, reduce cohort sizes, and delay entry into the workforce, even though these are already 6 to 8 week training programs that can quickly move people into jobs. And so this is really about filling urgent workforce shortages in our state, strengthening Minnesota's healthcare systems, and creating real pathways to economic mobility. I urge your support on this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. With that, I will open it up for discussion. Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. My question, I support this. I just want to probably make more of a comment that the bills that went into, that I drafted, came from the community. One was in Two Harbors. We had an ambulance issue after being on the task force for ambulance services. And in greater Minnesota, I think it's really important that this grant process realizes distance to travel. So we've had pathways and opportunities for students, but when you have to drive an hour or you have to drive 2 hours from greater Minnesota to access it, wherever it's being held, that is a barrier to entry. And I can see that because the results are showing for itself. When you train locally, at like the CNA programs at the hospital, and it's a very innovative model where they're getting hands-on experience right with the staff at the hospital. And in the EMT program, they were able to do ride-alongs right with the actual ambulance staff in Two Harbors is training people that actually have the jobs. And so these students are actually being able to take their EMT license when they graduate, and the tuition's covered. But when I talk to the students, and I talked to the community members, the enrollment has been maxed out in both programs, and the ambulances are going to be staffed up the North Shore. So when you're traveling up north, you're going to have a little bit of peace of mind that we'll have coverage because it's been a huge issue. And so I just urge the department to really remember where they're going to locate training. It has to be where there's pockets of gaps that match what I was saying previously, that where the training is, we go to the community when we have the possibility, because it's not possible for all the students in high school. I was a nursing assistant at 16, but it's very often that you have to drive an hour to access education, and that's just not feasible for people when we have winter driving 6 months of the year, long distances to go, and not everybody has a vehicle or has the ability to do that. And this has worked. So we have to make sure we don't lose that in this program would be my ask. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, may
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yeah, so Representative Schlesinger, I take to heart all of that, and I'd say we want to make sure that as the agency is making grants, that they're doing so in ways that that meet community needs that really are effective. I will say one challenge in our committee, I felt, and I think Chair Baker has agreed with this as well, is that when you make all these individual appropriations to individual agencies, it's actually hard for us then to hold the agency accountable. Like, what I'd rather do is have us say, these are our policy goals. These are the parameters. One of the parameters should be how easy is it for people in the community to take advantage of the given service, whatever it is. But we set out a series of goals. We decide the amount of money. That's complicated enough to do that. But then we can hold the agency accountable. So if they're not, for example, meeting your community's needs, that's something that we can then oversee. But I think it's hard for us to do that. We're spending so much time on each individual appropriation, and that's not something that I see in other committees. And I'd like to have that be a shift in this budget area to have that work more effectively. So I really appreciate what you say.
Thank you. And I just a comment on that, too, because I think, Representative Zelizikar, I think the point you make both about the substance, but also about the process, actually speaks to the second part of the bill, the Office of Community Investment, mm-hmm. the idea that we would want a program like OJP, but indeed who's working both with community, but also with legislators and ensuring that our priority setting and input is actually part of how those decisions are made, that we are incorporating that. I think I, on this committee, have often been frustrated that it feels like the agency and their proposals feels disconnected from some of the conversations we're having. And that has been, you know, since I've been here. I think the idea of having an office where one of the things that this committee and this legislature is doing is working together to set those priorities and also bring in the things like I've heard Representative Hussein, I've heard Representative Kozlowski, I've heard you, Representative Schlesinger, talk about some of the unique experiences in whatever the region is or whatever the community is. We have value to add, and I think having an office like this that can really do some of that process work will be really, really important in this, as I see in the language, strategic direction for grant making, in the idea of setting specific goals with documentable outcomes and allow us sort of a better vehicle to hold accountable to those goals. So I appreciate both that for both pieces of this bill. Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you're right, everything that you have stated. Chair Pinto, thank you for bringing this forward. This is a very important step forward for our state. Because Minnesota is facing a serious workforce shortage in healthcare. This will help us strengthen our workforce and ensure Minnesota have access to care that they need. This office will provide more, because I have many family members that work in healthcare and they are overworked. And we need to step up to give more trainings. I want to thank for testimony, and I know how great work that you do for our district and our community, because you do train a lot of students who are landing a good pay jobs, and that's what we need. That's the only way we can get out of the poverty. We want to make sure that people land a good jobs that pays and take care for their family members. And I am 100% supporting this bill, and thanks for bringing it forward, and thanks for thinking about this.
Thank you, Chair.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any further discussion of the bill? Before you go, Representative Baker, what I am really grateful for, and I think that both Chair Baker and Chair Pinto have been working on, is how do we do this system or do this process better, more in line with sort of a strategic angle, more in line with the priorities of the legislature. And I see this as a piece of that. I know that we're going to hear a bill tomorrow as well about how we make this transition. And so just really appreciate all the work that's gone in. Looking forward to more work as this moves forward. Representative Schultz, you want to go before Representative Baker? Go ahead, Representative
Thank you.
Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My quick question would just be, if this didn't happen this year, how would it set us back to these goals that we've discussed around this table?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Schultz. Taking each one in turn, getting a good idea in place earlier rather than later just means that if it's a good idea, then if it goes in later, you know, you're missing the chance to have it happen. I guess if I go to the Office of Community Investment, it's going to take a while, presumably, for that office to get up and running and provide the kind of strategic partnership with us that we're looking for. So if we wait till next year, then it means that by the time that office is up and running, presumably it's another year and a half later, next year we'll be appropriating funds for grants in some form, presumably, and that we're going to be sort of lacking that, the benefit of that connection. And what I'd like to do is have the office be in place so that when we make those decisions next year, by the time you hit summer of 2027, we've got an office in place. Again, if it's a good idea to pursue, we would want it to be in place to then take advantage of that next budget cycle. Because again, we just wouldn't be able to if this passed at the same time as those grants, at least without really slowing things down. And we know that one of the concerns that's expressed, I think quite legitimately, is if it takes a super long time for the funds to get out the door in the first place, then they're not being used in the way that we'd want them to. I'll note with the Healthcare Workforce Grant Program, a similar point, but even added, when a program is codified, one advantage of that that I've realized is that the agency can actually get RFPs out before the budget session starts, even if there's no funding for it, because then we then decide how much to put in, and then the agency, how much funding to put in, and the agency then can prioritize applications and fund. You know, if it's only a little bit of money, it might be just the top couple applications. If it's a lot more funds, then many more of the applications. What that means is that the funding can get out the door a lot faster to agencies if we have a codified grant program in place. I'm familiar with this in the homelessness area. The emergency services program is one where that program, they do the RFP the winter before the budget session. So by the time once we make a budget decision in hopefully May, occasionally it's been in June, they're set. They already know who the funds should go to, and it's just a matter of how much money is available. So codifying a grant program has a real advantage in terms of getting the money out the door fast. So that'd be a reason to get this grant program and others as well codified if we possibly can this year.
Representative Schultz, follow up? Nope. Chair Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I want to thank my co-chair Pinto on this work. I think one of the reasons why I'm excited about the potential of our week ahead of us is to work together in a moment of bipartisanship that we don't know who's going to be running this committee next year. We don't know who will be chairing it. We don't know which party will be in charge. But what we do know today is that I think both Chair Pinto and I recognize the need to make changes when it comes to competitive bids, competitive grants, direct appropriations. And I think what we have learned firsthand, being our first time chairs in this committee, is that we can do things better. And I think by our many hours of sitting down talking about why do we do it this way? And why do we, you know, why, how can we change it? I'm not a fan of expanding offices of something. And that's the problem that I've shared openly with my co-chair. Mm-hmm. But I think in this case, we are going to get a great return on investment because what we're doing currently isn't maximizing our workforce deserts out there like Rep. Zalesnikar has talked about. Those are real. And I think we're likely always going to have direct appropriations for certain things. But I think we can do a lot more around competitive grants. This office will help us with those investments in a way that I think we may not have that opportunity to do the same kind of work next year because we don't know who's going to be sitting in our chairs. So I think to just, again, give credit to the procedure that we've come to over the last 2 years of our work here, I think this is a beginning of relooking at our grant reform programs that I have brought forward and relooking at what Chair Pinto has brought forward here. I think we are going to find a way to do our work better because we'll have better guardrails, oversight in not breaking the bank kind of a thing. This is the way we should be doing this in a way that I think moves along to the next legislative session. So I hope that we can support this. I certainly plan to do it, and I appreciate your work on this, co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Pinto,
all right.
Closing comments.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much. I really appreciated the testimony regarding the Healthcare Workforce Grant Program, and I think a sense from all members that there's such a need in that area. I just want to make a comment a little bit more on the Office of Community Investment. I mentioned that grant program I established as a first-termer relating to investigating sex trafficking. To your point, Madam Chair, about collaborating with the legislature, after that passed, OJP reached out to me we had a meeting about sort of what was intended, and as they were shaping the program, they then came back in the following years as they were recognizing this is working well, we think this would work better, and they've educated themselves through the years about that issue and many others to then be able to shape it and recognize what are best practices in that particular area. I would hope we could do something similar in DEED as well, and provide support to support the fabulous work that the commissioner and the agencies are already doing. So, members, these will come back in a couple of days, but I so much appreciate the conversation now. Thank you so much.
And with that, I think it's laid over. Chair Baker, do you want to give a preview for tomorrow?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. As we kind of wrap up today's session, tomorrow we're going to have a presentation from Greater MSP. And we're going to, you know, hear some concerns and also some success stories about what's happening in Minnesota with our metro area, with some of the larger companies of what they're doing, the private investments that are going on. I think that's going to be exciting. I also think we have a bill tomorrow as well.
Workers' comp.
The workers' comp bill we talked about earlier, too. So I haven't looked at everything, but it's going to be another exciting meeting at Labor and Workforce, everybody, tomorrow morning at 8:15.
And Madam Chair,
I'll have a couple meetings left. So back to Chair Pinto.
Chair Pinto.
Yeah, thanks. And members, I felt important to note, so I would expect that the budget bill, the budget proposal from Chair Baker and me might be aiming for Wednesday morning to have that be posted. But people should be members of the public and members should be keeping an eye out for that. We'll make sure to get that out just as fast as we possibly can. And then, of course, we'll have input regarding that and amendments and discussion and everything else on Thursday. It looks like there may be Representative Schultz knows something he wants to say, Madam Chair. I'm not sure.
Representative Schultz, we all could get a half an hour back, depending on what you say here.
the quick question is just, Madam Chair, when are our amendments due?
Representative or Chair Pinto or Chair Baker,
and I believe that they would under the rules be due at noon. But of course, we will take into account amendment deadline based on when the bill is posted. And by the way, we'll post just as fast as we possibly can. I had an earlier time that I was going to list, and then I was looking at our House researcher and wanted to not cause concern. But I can just assure you that Chair Baker and I are going to move to get that posted as fast as possible, and then we'd take into account the timing of that in terms of the timing of any amendments as well, of course.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll work as efficiently as we can. I was just suggesting, you know, if we could just all work together, maybe we don't even need a deadline for this last hearing.
And perhaps
with
not.
With that, see everybody tomorrow. Same bat channel, same bat station, 8:15. We're adjourned. Schultz, were you